Welcome to Paddling the Blue. With each episode, we talk with guests from the Great Lakes and around the globe who are doing cool things related to sea kayaking. I'm your host. My name is John Chase, and let's get started paddling the blue. Welcome to today's episode of Paddling the Blue. Today, I am joined by Allison French, and Allison runs Sea Kayak Plockton in Scotland. Today, we'll talk about finding your why, the reasons you should visit the Chance, Allison's famous flapjack, and more. And a big thank you to Nick Ray from episode 101 for introducing me to Allison. We'll hear from Allison in just a moment, but before that, James and Simon at OnlineSeaKayaking.com continue to produce great content to help you evolve as a paddler and as a coach. Everything from basic strokes and safety to paddling in tides, surfing, coaching, documentaries, and their latest edition, Expedition Skills. It's all in one place, so if you're not already a subscriber to OnlineSeaKayaking.com, here is your opportunity to get started. Visit OnlineSeaKayaking.com, use the coupon code PTBPODCAST to check out, and you'll get 10% off on your subscription investment. Enjoy today's episode with Allison French. Hi, Allison. Welcome to Paddling the Blue.
Hi, John. Lovely to meet you.
Yes, lovely to meet you as well. So you were referred by Nick Ray. So tell us how you made your connection with Nick.
So I've been following Nick for a long time, actually, on social media. I think we've sort of had vague connections through Twitter or Facebook in the past. And I was obviously following his last trip around Scotland. And I've been kind of tracking where he was. And I noticed that he was sort of making his way around the Isle of Skye. And then he was in a sea loch called Loch Duich, which actually isn't very far from where I live. So I messaged him and said, look, and I figured that he'd be passing virtually my doorstep. And like many other people with Nick, I, you know, extended an invitation for a meal, a hot shower, or somewhere to stay. And I was delighted that he accepted that invitation. So when he reached the little bay called Port Cam, I live in a little village called Drumbuey. And when he reached the bay, which is about 5 minutes from where I live, he got in touch. And yeah, and it was wonderful to meet him. So he actually camped down at the shore, but joined me for two evenings for meals, fantastic conversation. And it gave him an opportunity to charge up his various electronic devices and do some washing. But it was great. It was lovely to spend some time with him and just really get to know him, because he's, you know, such an interesting man. So yeah, so that was how I met Nick.
Yeah, he definitely had a wonderful story. Not only his Scotland 365 life afloat trip, but trips previous and then just life in general.
And when I met him, I knew that I was going to be doing another trip a little bit later in the year. I think I met Nick very early in the spring, and I was due to be joining some other friends on a trip paddling the north coast of Scotland, which would have gone from near Kinlochbervie around the far northwesterly corner of Scotland, around Cape Wrath, which is a major headland in the UK. And I had sort of put it out to Nick that I said, well, we're planning on starting this paddle on whichever day in May it was. And if you happen to be there at the same time, then it'd be great to paddle with you. Never thinking that would actually happen. But actually, it turned out that he was able to meet up with us. He at one stage, he didn't think he would make it. And he put in a couple of really big paddling days. And we were fortunate to meet him. So I think it was a group of four of us paddled around Cape Wrath together, which was absolutely phenomenal. So it was lovely to sort of share that experience with him too, and actually get to paddle a major headland on his journey.
Well, that's fantastic. So your extension, your offer to him for a meal and some camaraderie, that's just another example of the kindness of strangers. He experienced so many of those, and so many of my guests on different trips have always referenced that kindness of strangers. So thank you for making that offer. So who is Allison French?
Oh, goodness. That's a big question. You know, I think first and foremost, I probably like to say I'm a people person. I thrive on connecting with people, bringing people together, creating situations where other people can connect. I love supporting people, being inclusive I guess, teaching, coaching, and developing people. So that's a, I think that's a really big part of me. And I guess the ultimate responsibility I've had in terms of people development has been parenting two children who are recently sort of fully fledged and embarking happily and independently on their own careers and life adventures. So I think that's sort of, that's a big part of who I am. But
right.
I'm also, sorry, this is a bit of a long answer, I'm afraid.
No.
I'm also a geographer and a fellow of the Royal Geographical Society, which means I have a kind of real fascination and curiosity about the world, especially the physical landscape, and trying to figure out and understand the processes that have formed and shaped it. And as a result of that, I've always been a great lover of the outdoors, in particular the coastal and marine environment. And I probably should say I'm a sea kayaker, because that's probably the main reason I'm chatting to you. So I'm a sea kayaker and a British Canoeing Advanced Sea Kayak Coach, which enables me to have sort of the freedom to explore and be curious about the sea and the coastline, as well as a real privilege to support paddlers of all levels to help them develop in confidence out on the water, so that they too can experience the breathtaking beauty of the Scottish Highlands and Islands from a different perspective. This is the last bit. I think, and finally, I would say I'm a business owner, and maybe also an entrepreneur. I'm the founder of a sea kayaking business, which is called Sea Kayak Plockton. Plockton's a small, picturesque village situated in the northwest highlands of Scotland on the mainland adjacent to the Isle of Skye. It's just a perfect spot to run a sea kayaking business, which is what I've been doing for the last 13 years. And I've also got another little sort of kernel of a business. Not so much a kernel, but I've got another business idea that's in its sort of very early stages, which I'm sort of looking to launch next year too. That's another little exciting story. Yeah.
Okay. Now, what is that? Do you mind sharing?
Well, yes. Yeah, so there's a little bit of a backstory to it. When I set my business up, the sea kayaking business up 13 years ago, a really good friend of mine said, you need to do something a bit different in terms of how you look after your guests. And she said, why don't you make shortbread and make sure you offer that for mid-morning. We have mid-morning 11s. That's in Britain, we say 11s. It's mm-hmm. when traditionally we stop for tea or cake or biscuit or something mid-morning. And I thought, yeah, that's a good idea, but I don't really make shortbread, but I do make something called flapjack, which I think flapjack in the UK is different from the flapjack that you know in America. So flapjack here is a kind of oaty, syrupy, fruity, kind of almost cake-like food. And I've got my own sort of recipe. It's a sort of traditional recipe with an added twist. So I thought I'll make flapjack because it was something I knew that I made well, and offered it to my guests. And 13 years later, I'm still making it for guests. Every time I go out on the water, people are offered flapjack, and it's kind of become a thing. So I often ask people, when I sort of meet them for their session, and I'll ask them, what are you wanting to get out of the day? And it's, if it's regular clients, they will often say, well, we're just here for the flapjack. Anyway, quite a lot of people have been encouraging me to start making it to sell. So I'm actually going to be, come in the spring, I will actually be launching my flapjack business. So people will also be able to buy the flapjack to give them the complete Plockton experience. Delivered straight to their homes. So it's just been a fun kind of sideline. It's nothing too serious, but it's been a fun thing to be doing in the background. Yeah.
Well, a business doesn't always have to be serious, but being fun's even better.
Yeah.
So that's the famous sea kayak Plockton flapjack.
Exactly. That's right. Yes. It's become. Yeah, I think it was even Will Copestake. I think he gave me the slogan, the oats that became a legend. So I think that's become the strap line.
All right.
It's become a bit of a thing, and which has created a bit of pressure, because even on my expeditions, whether it's I'm running them or it's one of the instructors that work for me, if they're running them, I duly make sufficient quantities of flapjacks so that people can have it every single day for their mid-morning 11s.
Well, my mouth is watering. It sounds fantastic. So you mentioned geography. It's interesting because I've talked to a few other geographers recently, one of them being Nikki Mansell.
Yes, I've met Nikki a few times before, and in fact, she visited me very recently with Katie Carr, who you've also interviewed. So yeah, Nikki's very very keen geographer. Yeah.
So let's hear a little bit about Sea Kayak Plaqueton, or Plaqueton in general, even.
Plaqueton is a really picturesque bay which sits on the west coast of Scotland. So it's on the mainland adjacent to the Isle of Skye. So we're just a few miles from the Skye Bridge. It's where the ferry used to run over to the Isle of Skye. So the village has this very sheltered bay which faces east, even though we're on the west coast. So that means it's mostly sheltered from the prevailing wind and weather, which comes from the west and the southwest. The sea around Plaqueton is the waters of Lough Carron, and there's a beautiful little island archipelago to explore, and there are lagoons and nooks and crannies. So it's actually the perfect classroom for folk who are new to sea kayaking and wanting to learn some skills, or just those who are looking to improve skills and grow in confidence. And the village itself has all the various amenities that you would want. And it also has accommodation, fantastic sort of hotels and inns. And it's just very pretty. It even has palm trees growing because this part of Scotland sort of sits on the Gulf Stream. So we get these unusually warm seas, which keeps the climate quite temperate and relatively mild. So even palm trees can grow. And it's very popular. It's a really popular place for people to visit. And it's just really beautiful. So it serves as a great base to take people out onto the water. But the other great thing about its situation is that I'm really close to lots of other great venues. So because of the nature of the coastline of the west and northwest of Scotland, it has an incredible ruggedness. There are lots of islands. So there's just loads of options in terms of where you can take people to kayak, depending on what they're looking for. So we've got superbly sheltered areas, as well as areas where if you want rough water, you can find rough water. And then we've got areas with really strong tidal streams. We've got the narrows between the Isle of Skye and mainland Scotland, the narrows of Carl Rae. The tidal stream there can reach up to 12 knots sometimes on a big spring tide. So some really, really fast waters. So there are options, whatever you want to do. So I just feel I'm in the perfect place. I really do.
So everyone says their area is special, but I'm curious, what makes it so different from every other area of the world? So other than palm trees, which is really interesting, what would someone just coming to your area never know unless they experience it for themselves?
I think the general beauty of the Northwest Highlands of Scotland is, I find incredible. I think it's that combination of the sea with mountains that, you know, that reach, you know, 3,000 feet going straight from sea level. So I think it's that combination of sea and mountains. But on the west coast, because we've got lots an island landscape as well, you get these layers of scenery. And even in poor weather, even when the weather's really dull, you get this amazing sort of even monochrome effect on the landscape. I think obviously the weather makes it what it is as well. It's not always the best weather, but it's very dramatic. And then it's the culture, the culture of Scotland in general, and even more so the further sort of north and west you go. You've got a very strong culture of Gaelic. You've got music, traditions, stories, and that's very much embedded in. So there's a very rich cultural landscape as well as physical landscape. So there's just lots of layers to the Northwest Highlands of Scotland.
Well, it certainly does sound special. So how'd you find yourself there?
Oh my goodness, and that's a long story, I'm afraid. You can tell from my accent, this is not where I'm from originally. I actually grew up in a really landlocked part of the UK, the south of England, in Wiltshire. And I guess my first experience in a kayak was learning to roll at the local swimming pool as a teenager. But I love the outdoors, lots of outdoor trips with my family. And then through girl guides and school clubs, I learned to navigate and hike, and I love caving. But as we've already talked about, my biggest passion actually was geography. So I love maps, and I was fascinated about the world and curious as to why places looked and functioned the way they did. And I was especially interested in geomorphology. So that's the physical landscape and trying to figure out and understand the processes that had formed and shaped it. And growing up, which was before SatNav even existed, I was always the navigator in the car with a road atlas. And on family holidays to Devon and Cornwall in the southwest of England, I'd bore my parents to death with geography lessons as to why the beach looked the way it did and what caused the shape of the coastline. So no surprisingly, I studied geography at university. And part of studying geography meant I got the opportunity with a few other undergraduates. We organised an expedition to Fiji, and the research that we did there was about sea level change, which is obviously very, very topical now. And it was obviously something that people were very interested in. That was, you know, a long time ago. And my dissertation was on that. And then my sort of life did a little bit of a twist and turn. So on leaving university, I got a sort of corporate job in sales, marketing and business management in the pharmaceutical industry. But it was during that time in my sort of mid-20s that I discovered Scotland. I had to do a business trip and I was overwhelmed by it. I actually couldn't believe that nobody had told me about Scotland before. That was way before social media and the internet could give you any information about, give you sort of a lot, you weren't sort of inundated with information about different places. So on making that discovery, and when I was working in London, I volunteered to be assigned as, you know, having the regional responsibility for Scotland at that time, to basically give me any excuse to visit and really get to know the area. And then I had a relative who had a holiday house near Applecross, which is just a little bit further north from where I currently live. And it was during that time that I had my first sea kayak experience. A friend and I borrowed some sea kayaks, which we took onto Loch Maree, which is a really large freshwater loch in the northwest of Scotland. And it was amazing. And we did so my first trip was a sort of 2-day overnight camp on Loch Maree. Beautiful loch, which is a nature reserve, and a nature reserve because black-throated divers nest there, one of the UK's rarest birds. And then it was in 2002 that the move was made to live in the Highlands of Scotland. And the reason for coming to Plockton was because at that time I had a young family. My children were preschool and primary school age. So a big factor in where to live was dictated by where the high schools were, because they're few and far between when you get up into the northwest of Scotland. So that was the reason for Plockton, because there's a high school here and it's a very good high school. So that was how I came to be in Plockton, or just outside Plockton.
And then how did you end up starting Sea Kayak Plockton?
When I moved to the Plockton area, having had the sea kayaking experience on Loch Maree a number of years previous, I joined the local sea kayak club. It's a very active sea kayak club. It's called the South Sky and Loch Alsh Sea Kayak Club, and it's still thriving. It's a great sea kayak club. So I joined the club knowing that I enjoyed kayaking, and it was a way to get to know and meet people. And through the club, I met two countryside rangers, and I got to hear about their jobs, and I thought, wow, what a fantastic job. That sounds like the perfect job for me, because having left the pharmaceutical industry, and not really wanting to go back to that sort of corporate world, I had this hankering to do something which was a lot more related to what I was really interested in, and that was the landscape. So through those connections and through finding out about job opportunities, I actually managed to get a job as a countryside ranger, which was, at the time, it was just my dream job. It was involved conservation work, educational work in schools, some mountain guiding, and just basically sort of immersing myself in the landscape. It also meant I was tasked with the responsibility to set up sea kayaking activities for the National Trust for Scotland. And that played to my sort of sales and marketing experience. I was able to do sort of a thorough analysis of the outdoor activities market, developed marketing and business plans for the sort of powers that be in the National Trust. And it gave me a really solid understanding of the sort of the operational aspects of an outdoor business and developed my skills and experience as a sea kayak coach, which I really loved. So it was a really formative period in developing my style as a sea kayak coach. And then I moved into the role as a countryside marketing manager for the National Trust for Scotland, primarily working from home with sort of monthly trips to the head office in Edinburgh. And I enjoyed it, but it really highlighted my need to be more connected with people on a day-to-day basis. Sort of the working at home on my own, sitting at a computer, just really wasn't for me. So I kind of reached a real crux point in my life. I knew something had to change. I knew that I wanted to work in the outdoors and be connected to landscape. I wanted to utilize my business skills because actually I enjoyed that too. But most importantly, because it really is a really big part of me, I wanted to be connected to people and do something which fitted around my young family. I didn't even make the leap straight to running my own business. At that sort of crux point, a job opportunity arose actually as a marketing manager for Glenmore Lodge. That's Scotland's National Outdoor Centre. And basically, I didn't get it, which I was really disappointed about. And it was that failure that was the springboard for me to set up my own business, because I knew I needed to do something which ticked all my boxes. So yeah, that was a really important point. I had toyed with the idea of doing my postgraduate certificate in education to become a geography teacher, and also considered being a freelance sea kayak instructor working for other providers. But I settled on the idea of launching my own business venture because it gave me a new challenge. I'd never run my own business before. And having worked in marketing roles for big corporations, you do learn about marketing and running a business, but there's nothing like running your own business to really make your awareness very acute about the decisions you make and how you spend money in your business. So it's a bit like sea kayaking. When you solo paddle, that really heightens your awareness as to what you're doing on the water and the decisions you make. And I think it's the same if you become a sole trader running your own business.
That's a really interesting career path, going from a love of geography to yes. pharmaceuticals to then finding the secret to the north, which was Scotland.
Yes.
And then becoming a countryside ranger, and then eventually making your way through marketing to a sea kayak coach. So
I know.
So how did you then end up growing Sea Kayak Plockton into a successful full-time business?
The nice thing about running your own business is it meant I could engineer a business model to fit around a young family. So that was probably the primary consideration for me. But I think the other aspect was that it was also super important for me to be able to generate an income from it. I had a mortgage I needed to pay. I needed to, generate a livelihood for our family. So I made sure I did the market research and analysis, identified the business potential for Plockton. And it was really important for me to run the business, to be a sea kayak coach, based on my values. I think that's super important. And I think my sort of values, which are sort of translated into my business, it's about giving people confidence, treating people kindly, fairly, really making people sort of the center to what I do, and treating them really well. And that's not just the people that come and join me on the sea kayak trips and days and courses that I run. It also spills into the people that I work with. So I've got a superb team of kayak instructors that all work for me on a freelance basis. So they sort of dot in and out and work for me at different points during the year, doing different things. And in the 13 years that I've been operating the business, I've pretty much had the same group of instructors that have stayed with me throughout that story. We're like a big family, really. That's really important. So I think it's, and those instructors share my values too. So the way they treat people and the way they work is very much aligned with how I like to work. So there's a real authenticity there, and I think that's an ingredient that's enabled the business to be successful and go from strength to strength.
So that certainly says something about the integrity and the quality of the business that you've built, that they've stayed with you for the entire time, for that full 13 years.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah.
So tell us about your role as a Sea Kayak Award provider and what the journey was like to reach that.
That's happened sort of during this sort of journey becoming a sea kayak coach. I've always enjoyed having something to work towards. So I've just done one step at a time. So at every stage of the process, I've always just looked to the next step, the next sort of qualification that I need to get to be able to do what I do well. And as a result of that, as I've worked through various qualifications that I've needed for my own sort of competence and being able to operate in the types of waters that I want to operate in, I then just moved to that next step, which is then becoming a Sea Kayak Award provider for British canoeing. And it's just something nice to add into everything else I do. But what it also does is it keeps my sort of skills and knowledge and expertise really current, and it keeps me sort of on top of my game and makes sure that I'm providing something which is really good quality and in line with what British Canoeing and the Scottish Canoe Association are wanting to deliver in terms of kayaking. And I've been very fortunate that some of the coaches that have been most influential to me, thinking particularly of Doug Cooper, who just so solid in terms of, you know, their knowledge and their expertise, and I've been able to learn a huge amount from them, which has given me that really good basis in terms of my own paddling skills and also what I try and teach to other people.
So if you could paddle only one venue in your home waters, what would that be and why?
Oh, okay. So many places I could choose from. goodness me, where to begin? I think for me, if I could only paddle one place again, it would be the Shants, which are a small group of islands in the Hebrides. They're about 5 miles from the coast of Lewis in the Outer Hebrides, and about 12 miles from the northern tip of the Isle of Skye. So they sit in a stretch of water called the Minch, which is a channel between the Isle of Skye and sort of northwest Scotland and the Outer Hebrides. And the Shants are one of the most important breeding colonies. They're one of the great sort of bird places of the world, and one of the most important breeding colonies for birds in Europe. So a huge array of seabirds there, you know, guillemots, razorbills, fulmars, kittiwakes, various gulls, great skuas, and significantly they have nearly 250,000 puffins, which is about 10% of the UK puffins, absolutely phenomenal. And I knew about the Shants. They'd been on my radar for many years. I'd crossed the Minch before from the Isle of Skye to the Hebrides, but I didn't go via the Shants on that occasion. I went via another island called Flatahuin, which is just off the north of Skye. But you can see the Shants. They're there in the distance. And I knew about these islands, but I'd never wanted to go there because they were infamous for a black rat population. And it was thought that these black rats, which are actually quite rare in the world, it was thought that they arrived on an 18th century shipwreck. And about 10 years ago, it was estimated that there was about 3,500 rats on the islands. And that number would increase exponentially in the summer months when the birds were there and there were all these eggs they could eat. And I'd heard stories from other kayakers, particularly Murty Campbell, that if you camped on the islands, you had these rats literally running over the top of your tent. And I just thought I couldn't cope with that. So whilst I really wanted to go there, it was the black rat population had always put me off. I just didn't want to go. But in 2018, there was a project between the RSPB and Scottish Natural Heritage to eradicate the rats, which they managed to do successfully. So this year, when we had superb weather in midsummer, great weather forecast, a good friend of mine happened to be on the Isle of Skye, and the conditions were just perfect to make the crossing out to the Shants. And I was blown away by it. Absolutely. It was just an overwhelming place for its natural beauty. And it's the combination of dramatic cliffs. The geology is stunning. Huge basalt columnar cliffs, black basalt. And then a sky full of seabirds. And apparently the Shants, apparently in terms of puffin population, there are more puffins on St Kilda, which I've also paddled to. And that's another superb place. But so there are more puffins on St Kilda, but at the Shants, it's the density of the puffins, which makes it incredible. So it's as though the sky is filled with a swarm of bees. It's so intense that it's quite overwhelming. And it was just stunningly beautiful. The Shants are a hard to reach place. The people that tend to visit there are either kayakers or people go in yachts. They're difficult to get to because of their location. So they're very unspoiled. When we were there, there was nobody else there. There is a boffy on the island, which we'd camped outside. And there was just one other yacht in the bay. Interestingly, we sort of paddled over to the yacht just to find out where they'd come from. And it turned out to be the sister of Murty Campbell. So she knew. So there's all these lovely connections. But no, it was a very magical place, just full of life, really quite spectacular. And full of life, not by chance either. It's the geology of the islands, and it's the geology of the seabeds which creates this abundance of life. The seabed in the Minch is roughened and corrugated with hard volcanic rock ridges, and the Shants, they're very much the Shants' submarine cousins, and the tides run violently across them, and the tides are so turbulent there that the nutrients in the muds and sands on the seafloor are stirred up throughout the height of the water column. Because the water column is so thick with those elements, the phytoplankton, the lowest level of life, thrives. And then the zooplankton, the smallest of animals, feeds on that phytoplankton. And sand eels and sprats feed on the zooplankton. And then the larger fish, the mackerel and herring, as well as the birds, can feed on them. And just to the north of the Shants is the perfect place for sand eel breeding. Sand eels like sandy, gravelly seabeds with not too rapid a circulation of water and no more than a couple of hundred feet deep. So the birds aren't there by chance. It's a great hunting spot, a marketplace for them. And the birds have got for shelter because of these hard volcanic rocks. So there's a place of protection from predators. And it's an isolated, so you've got this isolated cliff habitat plus enriched turbulent seas, so it's food heaven. So yeah, and we were there at just the right time of year. Everything is precisely timed. You've got an increase in warmth and light in March and April. The plankton thickens and the sand eels begin to emerge, and then the seabirds then begin to arrive back to breed and nest and incubate their eggs. And with each bird feeding and having a slightly different sort of strategy in the way they survive there. So I think if I could paddle anywhere, it would always be to the Shants in sort of early summer or late spring, because I think it's absolutely mind-blowingly beautiful. Yeah, I'd go back in a heartbeat. Yeah.
It certainly sounds like a fantastic place, and as an added bonus, no rats.
I know. So I think I knew how fantastic the Shants were, because I'd heard so many stories over the years. But yeah, it's the black rats. It's, the species Rattus rattus, apparently, but they had lived there for a long time, and I just don't think I could cope with rats running over my tent.
Yeah, that does not sound like a pleasant environment to me either. So do you know how the Shants got their name?
Oh, actually, I don't.
Okay.
So I don't know that. Sorry. I don't know how they got their name. No.
All I can think of is you shan't want to go there.
I probably shouldn't even be talking about it, because it's one of these places you don't really want too many people to go there. But I think by virtue of its location, it's not the sort of place that lots of people visit. So St Kilda, which I've also visited many times, is more remote. It's further away.
Right.
But in some ways, St Kilda is more accessible because there are a lot more people run trips. So there are fast boats and cruise ships and yachts, and you can obviously kayak out to St Kilda too. It's a much more committing and a much bigger paddle to get there. But I think in some ways, yeah, St Kilda is a bit more accessible than the Shants.
Yeah. When you mentioned St Kilda, and you were talking about the Shants and how they were inaccessible, I was thinking about the same thing, that St Kilda is less accessible, but Shants is the lesser known cousin, I guess.
I think so. Yes, definitely. I think there are lots of similarities between the two, but yeah, the Shants are a lesser known cousin. And another place which I visited a number of times now, because I run trips there, is Mingalay, which is another very remote island off the southern tip, the very southern tip of the Outer Hebrides. And there's the very bottom, you've got the island of Mingalay, which in many ways is like St Kilda, because it's very remote. It's surrounded by ocean. It also has a rich history and huge cliffs and nesting seabirds. And it's actually a little bit more unspoiled than St Kilda. St Kilda, again, because of its location, does have a sort of a military installation there. So there's a little bit more infrastructure there than some of these other places that exist. But basically, I mean, Scotland and the Hebrides, there are thousands of islands that you can visit, and I think you could spend a lifetime exploring them and probably never visit them all.
It certainly sounds spectacular. So to shift gears a little bit and move away from Scotland for a moment, you spent some time in Indonesia with Viking Cruises.
Yes, I did. Yes.
All right. So share that experience with us. How did that come about?
2 years ago, I was running a sea kayak leader training course. And there was one of the chaps on the course, after spending sort of a couple of days together, was talking about the work that he did working on board cruise ships, and said, "Had I thought about it?" He said, you'd be great at it, Alison. You'd love it." So I just said, I was just going through a bit of a phase in my life where I just said yes. And so he sort of made a connection with the recruiter. And then, to cut a long story short, I accepted some work working as a kayak instructor on board a cruise ship which began its cruise in Singapore and cruised the Indonesian islands quite a few Indonesian islands on its way to Darwin, Australia, and then back again. And my responsibility on board was a sea kayak instructor and also a Zodiac driver and lecturer. And it really incredible experience. I shouldn't say this to the recruiter. I probably would have done it for without being paid because it was so enjoyable. And I tried to work out why I loved it so much. And I think it was because it felt like a high-end geography field trip. We just visited so many different places. It was just like a geography field trip. So it was pretty spectacular. And it was wonderful to visit landscapes and seas, which were just completely different from anything that I paddle in Scotland, because it's in the tropics. Very different and possibly in some ways more challenging, because actually we experienced very rough seas there. And we had quite a few days where we weren't able to paddle. It was glorious to be able to just paddle in shorts and t-shirts and not wear the full set of thermals and a dry suit. So that was amazing. And I'm doing it again that was January and February this year, which is a perfect time of year for me to do that kind of work, because it's when I'm not really operating anything in Scotland. So I'm going away again, but this time I'm going somewhere not quite so tropical. This time I'm going to the Antarctic. Uh-huh. So I'm going to be sea kayak instructor on board a ship for 8 weeks, which will visit the Antarctic Peninsula and the Falkland Islands, and South Georgia and Patagonia. So I'm very excited about that. I'm very much looking forward to it. And currently devouring books on Antarctic explorers to find out what they did.
Well, both sound like fantastic journeys. And for reference for our listeners, so the Indonesia trip, that was 2023, and yeah, Antarctica will be 2024.
That's right. Yeah.
All right. Now, what qualifications must one have to get a job on a cruise ship?
Oh, you need quite a lot of various qualifications, and it's not just the kayaking ones. I'm the British Canoeing Advanced Water Coach, which is kind of one of the highest levels you can have. So that sort of enables you to sort of operate in any waters. But the more important qualifications are some of the qualifications you need to actually work on board a cruise ship. So I had to do courses on firefighting at sea, sea survival and safety, personal and social responsibility on board ships, sea security, so that's learning about pirates, and also needed a powerboat instructor certificate too, so because there's the boat handling that needs to be done. So it's more those sorts of certificates and courses, certificates that you need to operate on a cruise ship.
Coming back to Scotland, what is the Plockton Kayak Carnival?
So the Plockton Kayak Carnival, when the business reached its 10th birthday, I had this notion to create an event to celebrate those first 10 years. And it was very much an event to celebrate those years, but also to say thank you to the people that worked with me, to my guests, and also to the local community for being there with me. So yeah, I created the Plockton Kayak Carnival. I didn't want to call it a symposium. While symposiums are great, I wanted it to have a more sociable, fun, playful feel. So hence we use the word carnival.
It sounds fun.
Yeah, and it was. So that was meant to happen in 2020. And we all know what happened in 2020.
Sure.
The world shut down. So it never happened. And it got put off to the next year. And then it never happened again because there was still too much uncertainty because of the pandemic. So it actually happened for the first time in 2022 eventually. So we got there eventually, but it ended up being a 12-year anniversary rather than a 10-year. And basically, yeah, it was this celebration, and it was a combination of paddling days, and one of the things that was really important to me was that it was very inclusive. This wasn't an event which was exclusive to people who had lots of kayaking experience or who paddled a certain type of kayak or anything like that. I wanted anybody to feel that they could participate. So we had opportunities for people who were complete beginners to see kayaking, as well as for people that were super experienced and themselves, you know, actually top level coaches. So there was something for everybody. First day was centered very much on paddling in blocks. So we had lots of groups on the water. I think we had about 70 people out in the water paddling, doing different sessions. And then we had everybody sort of coming together in the evening for a really wonderful sociable evening where Brian Wilson, author of Blazing Paddles, who I know you've interviewed, and also Will Copestake, who had done his Mache to Monroe trip. And they're both great friends of mine. I've known them both for a very long time. And they did the most amazing lecture where they talked about paddling around Scotland, and they compared and contrasted their experiences. It was just a wonderful lecture. It was really inspiring, and they both pitched it perfectly. So we had this wonderful lecture followed by a ceilidh, which is very Scottish. A local band played and we literally danced the night away. And then it was more paddling the next day. It was an amazing success. And I had originally planned it to be very much a one-off event, but due to its success and the demand, it became the inaugural carnival. So we're actually holding the next one in September 2024. The Sea Kayak Carnival is happening again. And I'm delighted that Nick Ray is going to be our guest speaker at the next carnival, sharing his stories about, again, paddling around Scotland. But Brian and Will also be there too. So it could even become a bit of a three-way talk next year. So I'm super excited about it next year. And already it's sort of fast filling up. There aren't that many places left. So it'll be a great event.
Well, congratulations on creating what sounds like a wonderfully fun, very inclusive event. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned so first happened in 2022, will happen again in 2024. Do you expect to continue this every 2 years?
I think so. Yes, I think so. It's too much to do every year. And there's something nice about making it every other year, I think. Yeah, I'll keep going as long as I keep going, I suppose.
All right. Well, congratulations on that. Congratulations on building Sea Kayak Plockton. Another question about Sea Kayak Plockton. What advice do you have for others who are trying to build their own businesses?
I think you need to, with any business, and a sea kayaking business is no exception. I think you have to ask yourself why you want to do what you do, because it's really got to come from your sort of passion and your heart and your values. And that needs to be the sort of basis for, I suppose it's the basis for anything we do in life, isn't it? But in a business is no exception. So I think that's really important. And then I think the other thing is to really do the market research. I think you can't shy away from having to do what seems to be a bit of the boring stuff. It's sort of doing a bit of market research and doing a bit of analysis to make sure that there is potential, there is business potential for what you want to do. Because ultimately, the thing which could cause the biggest stress for somebody that sets up their own business or is self-employed is if you can't generate an income. You know, we do have to survive. And yeah, you know, it's not viable if you're not able to generate a livelihood. Okay, so checking that there is business potential there, and then again, sounds really boring, but you have to do a business plan if you're needing to generate any finance to support that venture. You'll need a business plan to be able to go to a financial provider in order to generate those funds. Give people the confidence in you. So it's kind of getting all your ducks in a row. It's sort of making sure you've done that sort of preparatory work, the market, the business planning, putting the right marketing in place to set the business up. And if you've got all those elements right, then you've always got to work. You've got to still work hard. I think it takes a number of years for a business to begin to create its own momentum. First few years are always the hardest. For many years, each winter, I would always worry that, you know, would anyone book with me next year? Every winter I used to experience that. And then I think I got to about 5 or 6 or 7 years in and I suddenly relaxed and I had that and I felt the business had gathered its own momentum and I felt confident and it kind of then, I wouldn't say ran by itself, it was established enough. I was getting enough new business because I had great clients. I would get a lot of repeat business. And I think because I really worked by my values and what I believed in, I got lots of recommendations. So the importance of that word of mouth, that people telling other people about what you do, and that. And so through all of the combination of factors, that the business sort of really rolled itself. And then I think that gives you the opportunity to start thinking about other things you want to do. Which direction, you know, do you want to take your business in different directions? And I suppose this is where the flapjack business is going to come in. I'm, you know, you've got this, you can have little other little projects bubbling away in the background and areas you want to diversify in to satisfy some of your own curiosity and needs.
So I heard a few things in there. First, the Simon Sinek find your why. And then, and that's, I think that's probably the piece that a lot of people really don't spend enough time thinking about, which is really, why am I doing this? And why is it important to me? And then build that plan. And which is, like you said, it's the boring part, but the important part. And then have values, live those values, and then eventually flapjack.
Exactly. So when I'm too old to get in and out my kayak, I can at least stand in my kitchen and bake.
There we go. So Alison, where can listeners find you?
I have a website and it's seakayakplockton.co.uk. So that's the best place. And all my contact details and social media links are all there.
Super. Now, you've mentioned a couple of other folks, Will Kopstig, Nikki Mansell, which you talked about, Murdy Campbell, Brian Wilson, Katie Carr, Doug Cooper, Nick Ray, all previous guests of the show as well.
I know.
Yeah. Yes. And now you as well. So the next question that I have for you, knowing that there's all those guests and it is a small world, is who else would you like to hear as a future guest on Paddling the Blue?
I know, and that was a really difficult, I had been thinking about this because lots of the people that I would have liked to recommend it, as you say, you have already interviewed. So I have thought long and hard about this. And actually, a person that I don't know at all, but I've been following him on social media just this year, is a young man called Dougal Glacier. And Dougal is now famous because he set the world record for kayaking around the UK, which he did this year. And he completed that journey in 40 days right around the United Kingdom. And he did it, most of it solo, which was impressive. And he was, some of the days he was putting on average sort of 90 to 100 kilometer days. But more impressive, he suffers from type 1 diabetes. So he did this adventure with the extra challenge of coping with a really serious illness. And throughout that journey, he would even, through his sort of social media and his website, you could actually see his blood glucose levels. So he was kind of wanting to create awareness of, you know, that life doesn't have to be limiting. So I think Dougal will have some really amazing stories. He had some really amazing stories based on his adventure. As I said, I've never met him, but I can send you the links on his social media links for you to make contact.
Yes, I'm definitely familiar. Dougal's epic adventure was quite an epic as he made his way around the UK. And he and I have had a chance to talk briefly prior to that trip. And we'll continue to get in touch here. So that's actually the second referral that I've received just recently for Dougal since his trip. So that's fantastic. And we'll make sure that we get a hold of Dougal and definitely would like to have him on the show.
So, yeah, I think he'd be fascinating.
Yeah. So Alison, thank you very much. It's been wonderful hearing from you, learning about Plockton, learning about the Shants as well. And it certainly does sound like a very special area of the world. And hopefully myself and hopefully others of our guests will get chances to visit there in the future. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, John. It's been a pleasure to chat to you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
If you want to be a stronger and more efficient paddler, Power to the Paddle is packed with fitness guidance and complete descriptions, along with photos of more than 50 exercises to improve your abilities and enjoy your time on the water. The concept and exercises in this book have helped me become a better paddler, and they can make a difference for you too. The exercises in the book can help you reduce tension in your shoulders and low back, use the power of your torso to create leverage and use less energy with each stroke, use force generated from your lower body to make your paddling strokes more efficient, have the endurance to handle long days in the boat, drive through the toughest waves or whitewater, protect your body against common paddling injuries, and while you're at it, you might even lose a few pounds, and who wouldn't mind that? So visit paddlingexercises.com to get the book and companion DVD.
It's always fun to talk to someone who has found the way to live the life of their dreams through kayaking. Thank you to Allison for joining us and for sharing your story. And now we all have another place on the bucket list, the Shants. Sounds really fascinating. Maybe I'll get a chance to try that famous flapjack too. Visit the show notes for this episode to connect with Allison. And while you're there, if you've enjoyed this and other episodes of Paddling the Blue, please consider clicking the Buy Me a Coffee link at the bottom corner of the page and sending a few dollars our way. Every little bit helps offset the cost of producing and hosting the show. Thanks to all who have helped us along the way, and thank you to you for your support. And thanks again to our partners at OnlineSeaKayaking.com for extending that special offer to you. Visit OnlineSeaKayaking.com, enter the code PTBPODCAST to check out, and get 10% off just for being a member of the Paddling the Blue community. Our next guest is another amazing paddler, Amber Champion. I first met Amber at the Bay of Fundy Sea Kayak Symposium, and she was just as impressive as her paddling resume. I knew we had to have a conversation, so I look forward to sharing our talk with you. Until next time, thanks again for listening, and I look forward to bringing you the next episode of Paddling the Blue.
Thank you for listening to Paddling the Blue. You can subscribe to Paddling the Blue on Apple Music, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Please take the time to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Music. We truly appreciate the support. And you can find the show notes for this episode and other episodes, along with replays of past episodes, contact information, and more at paddlingtheblue.com. Until next time, I hope you get out and paddle the blue.